was a good friend of mine.
Hello and welcome to the Huntsman World Senior Games Active Life. My name is Kyle Case, and I'll be your host on this amazing journey as we attempt to help you get the most out of your life. Joining me in our studio today is my co-pilot, Lil Baron.
Hey, Mr. Case.
Lil Baron.
How you doing?
Today's a great day.
Good.
I am doing good.
Good.
You know, over the past few weeks, we've been highlighting some of the benefits that are available to all the participants at the Huntsman World Senior Games, and it's been fun.
Yeah.
But today, given who our guest is, I'm going to forego that so that we can spend a little bit more time with her.
Okay.
Listen, the games are awesome. They're an incredible value. Take advantage of early bird pricing.
Yes.
Which is going to end in just a few days on August 1st. And everything you need to know is available at Senior Games. And that's all I'm going to say today. We'll maybe get back into it more.
Quick.
Yeah. We'll maybe get back into it more next week. But but just like I said, the games are great.
Yes.
SeniorGames.net. Check it all out.
Absolutely.
Today's guest
is
Tricia Zorn Hudson. Mm-hmm. Now, listen to this, Lil.
Okay.
Tricia was born with an eye disorder called aniridia, which is the lack of the iris or the colored part of the eye. And that causes limited vision or blindness.
Mm-hmm.
Now listen to this.
Okay.
Tricia is the most decorated and successful athlete in the history of the Olympic or Paralympic Games.
My gosh.
She has won 55 Olympic medals, 41 gold, 9 silver and 5 bronze over 7 consecutive Paralympic Games from 1980 until 2004.
Oh my goodness.
Following the Sydney Paralympic Games in 2000, she held 8 world records in her class. In 2012, she was inducted into the International Paralympic Hall of Fame. And in 2022, she was inducted into the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Hall of Fame. And in September of 23 this year, Tricia will be the first Paralympic swimmer to be inducted into the International Swimming Hall of Fame in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And and that's not all. Outside of the pool, listen to this. Tricia is an attorney for the Department of Veteran Affairs. So she studied special education initially at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and school administration and supervision at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. And then she attended law school at Indiana University, Robert H. McKinney School of Law. Tricia is killing it.
I like her already.
Thank you so much, Tricia, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, my word. It's a pleasure. It's our pleasure.
My goodness.
So seriously, like you are such an inspiration already in just reading your bio. And I'm excited to visit with you and get to know you a little bit better. I want to jump into the swimming part of things first, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about some other things, but I do want to make sure that we get to spend a lot of time in the pool, if you will. So let's just start at the very beginning. How were you introduced to swimming? I mean, you're born with this, this deficiency in your eyes. It would seem to me like maybe swimming wouldn't be the first thing that comes to mind, but how were you introduced to swimming? How did that go?
Yeah, well, swimming was kind of a natural thing for me. I was, born and raised in Southern California. So spending the, summers at the beach was, everything. And going into the water was just a natural thing for me. So with the limited vision and not being able to really, do well and, in like ball sports or anything like that, going into swimming was just something that was natural to me and that I felt more comfortable with. And I was able to do, it took less adaptations to have that I had to deal with. So it just was so, it was freeing actually.
So was it something that your parents encouraged you to do, or was it something that you said, hey, mom and dad, this is what I want to do, and then they followed behind? What happened there?
I did, because of my vision, and I was the only person in my family that had the rare eye condition, so my parents never treated me any different than than my sibling, my older sibling, and so I tried everything. I did other sports. I just didn't feel comfortable, or I wasn't I'm very competitive, so if I didn't feel like I was succeeding, I just wanted to try something that I was good at. And so they were starting a new swim team in the town where we lived, and then we went down, and one thing led to another, and here we are today.
I just want to say this because this struck me as awesome. 55 Olympic medals. And she says, I'm kind of competitive. So.
Just a little bit.
That is just fantastic. I love it. So, and I love that your parents and your family just were like, hey, yeah, this is what we do. And so we're just going to do it. So now, walk us through a swimming competition for you, being visually impaired. Like, I don't want to be like totally naive to things, but like, how do you know that you're swimming straight? Like,
sure,
you know, and how do you know when to turn and things like that? I can see and I can't swim straight. You know, I'm running into the cords all the time, and I've got scabs on the top of my head where I've hit the wall. So how do you do those kinds of things?
Well, yeah, I mean, there was some times where, you know, you bump your head, but again, you adapt and overcome. And so what I did for me that worked personally for me was that I would count my strokes from one end of the pool to the other. And so I would know when to see the wall or to be able to turn. Yeah. Also, in a competitive pool, as you know, there's a big, thick black line on the bottom of the pool. And so that was helpful. I was able to see that and kind of gauge from there. But when I was doing a certain thing like in outdoor pools, if there was a lot, if the sun was out, I would typically stay close to the lane line.
Okay.
And kind of brush my hand against the lane line so I know that I was staying straight.
That makes sense. I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when was your first actual competition? Was it as a young girl or was it something you picked up later on in your teens or?
Yeah, I started swimming when I was 7.
Okay.
Not serious until I was 10. And then from 10 on, it was very much competitive swimming at the high level.
Yeah. Oh. And obviously you had such an incredible amount of success at the highest level. When did you feel like, I'm pretty good at this locally, but maybe there's a shot for me to take this to a national or international stage? Were you young then, or was that something that you kind of grew into?
Yeah, you know, I didn't even know anything. I didn't know that the Paralympics even existed at the time when I was younger. It wasn't even a process of mine. I mean, my mom and, you know, my family, I always competed against people with, you know, normal vision, and trained with them. I was immersed in that environment, so I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. So after the 1980 Olympic trials, when I competed there, and of course we knew that, you know, at that time we were going to boycott the games, and I had missed the games, the team by 1/100th of a second. A gentleman who was very involved with the Paralympics contacted me and said, you know, we have the Paralympics. We wanted to know if you wanted to get involved. And at that time, my mom didn't want me to use it as a crutch or, you know, as something to use it to substitute for, you know, what I had been only exposed to is competing with somebody without any physical disability. So, but then I thought, you know, at that young age, I was just curious. You know, I had never been around people with physical disabilities. I really didn't know what it was about. So I said that I would go to their national championships and competed and made the team. And so that was my first experience with the Paralympics.
Okay. And how old were you at the time?
At 16.
16 years old. Mm-hmm. And I just want to clarify, like, you're so humble about some of these things, but you were 1/100th of a second from making the Olympic team.
Yes.
Not the Paralympic team, but the Olympic team.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. That's incredible.
That is incredible.
So that happens. And I mean, obviously you've got to feel pretty good about your performance, but also there's going to be that level of like, oh, I was so close. Yes. And then you have this other opportunity that comes along. And like you said, more out of curiosity, really, you just went for it. I'm just going to ask, did you like dominate there, or was there some good competition for you there as well?
I mean, there was some competition, but I think I was, you know,
you
I was really, I was in my prime, I think in my prime at that time. I mean, obviously 16 and, you know, you know, not making the games was at that time, you know, it was crushing at that time. So, you know, I think I was just trying to make a statement at, you know, at that age. So at the, at those games in 1980, I competed in 7 different events and I won 7 medals. So, but that was my first experience with everything. And it was life changing from that point on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now you have this incredible venue to share your talent and push yourself and strive to be better. I want to talk a little bit about, you said you swam in 7 different events.
Yes.
For those who are not familiar with Olympic swimming or even competitive swimming in general, talk just a little bit about what those 7 events are and what the different strokes are and maybe what's your favorite one.
Sure. In competitive swimming, you have the 4 main strokes, and you have butterfly, backstroke, breaststroke, and freestyle. And then you have an individual medley, which consists of all 4 of those strokes. You have different distances. You can go from a 50 meter to 100 meter to 200 to 400 meter in certain events. I specialized in backstroke and butterfly. And I was at, I was a kind of a sprint mid distance. So I swam between like 100 to 400 meters.
So I know in swimming, 400 meters is kind of like, it's like the end of the sprints, but it's still considered a sprint, it's still a long ways to swim.
I've
swam 400 meters before and it feels like a long way. So that's awesome. So let's get a little bit now into the Paralympic aspect of things. So for those of us who are not super familiar with that, we talk about different classifications. Talk about those classifications and what they are and how, you know, they're able to accommodate different athletes and so forth.
Sure. The Paralympics have different classifications, and you're classified according to your disability and limitations. So for example, there's for swimming, let's say it starts always with an S for swimming, and it goes one. S1 is for your more severe, your typical spinal cord injuries, and people who have limited movement. So those are the more severe disabilities, whereas you have an S10. Which would be less disability, and maybe just have a, you know, maybe your hand maybe have an amputation or something like that. So the higher the number, the less physical disability. Now for the blind and visually impaired, you have 3 different categories. Being the S11s are those individuals that are just light perception, to probably an acuity of probably 2800, 20 to 1000 visual acuity. S12s are light perception to like 20 over 800. And then the S13s are the highest visual acuity. So meaning that they are just at the, like the national for us, being considered visually impaired, is 20 over 200.
Okay. So, which is your classification?
I competed in the S12 category. Okay. And in between.
And so in those 3 categories, it would be atypical if you would compete against the other categories. You mostly would stick within your own category. Is that correct?
That is correct. There are times though that you can compete up. You can compete at a higher if you choose to.
Okay.
And can compete at a higher level. So if I wanted to swim in an S13, I can, but you can't go down.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. We do the same thing with the age groups.
Yeah.
Here at the World Senior Games. So that makes sense.
Yes.
I do want to talk a little bit about people's perception of you know, what disability is and maybe what your challenges are.
Sure.
If you're talking about the severe, you know, like amputations and those types of things, those are very easy to see.
Right.
We can see this person doesn't have an arm, this person is swimming without legs or whatever. Your disability might be a little bit harder to observe and see. Did you ever get pushback from people, or was that just something that people were ready and willing and able to accept?
I think having a blindness or visual impairment, It is a difficult disability to have because it, like you stated, it's not something that you can see unless you're using a white cane that, right. you know, socially is percept, you know, people perceive, you know, if you're blind or visually impaired, you have to use a cane, which is not true. That being myself, I don't use a cane, but you would be able to notice that I obviously have a vision issue if I look at something close, if yeah. I'm reading it. You know, I've had the comments, you know, well, did you forget your glasses or something like that, which is sure. kind of funny. You know, I think at a younger age, you know, you take personal, you know, offense to that, but you know, the older you get, it's like, you got to laugh at it too. You know, you got to make fun of your own self because that's just the way it is. But, you know, now I would just come back with something like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess I must have forgotten more, you know, it's, or yeah, I guess and I think to myself, how people process,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Like here's an adult and you see that there may be struggle, you know, either trying to read something, that if they did have glasses, they might have had them with them. So, right. you know, it's just processing things, you know, differently. And but that's just our culture.
Yeah. Well, what a great attitude yeah. And way yeah. to approach it. You've been in the game for a long time. You swam yes. for a long time. I mean, 7 Olympic Games is an incredible feat just in and of itself. And then to continue to be successful for all 7 of those games is just amazing. So congratulations yeah. on that.
Well,
I'm
you.
Curious if the rules changed over that time frame. So, I mean, you're talking about what, almost 28 years of time or as far as like, you know, the rules that you swam under or was mm-hmm. have they been pretty consistent?
Well, I think within the rules have been consistent and I think, but the big thing, obviously in the Olympic Games, you have, some of the big issues, you know, are, you know, the anti-doping and the doping situations yeah. and the drug use. In the Paralympics, it is a big thing is the classifications because and especially in other countries, the way that people are classified may not be as what, you know, we would in the States classify. So you may have somebody that, you know, should be in a higher classification and they're not, you know,
yeah.
so that's been a big issue within the Paralympics. And it's actually been ongoing ever since I've been a part of the Paralympics.
Do you feel like we're making progress in that area or is it just going to continue to be a challenge no matter what?
I mean, there has been progress, but I just think that, in my opinion, I just think that they still have a ways to go.
Yeah.
You know, just from the classification standpoint and the processing of it and who actually is doing the classifications. You know, in my belief, I believe that it should be a medical professional in that particular area that you state whatever disability you have should be classifying that person. And that's just not the case.
That's interesting. Yeah, it seems to me like I agree with you. It seems like that would be a logical way to do it.
Yes.
Okay. So that's some of the technical aspects of things. I want to back away from that just a little bit and talk about 7 Olympic Games. Holy cow. That's amazing. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
What did your life look like in the quote unquote off season? The Olympic Games are once every 4 years. Do you maintain that high level of fitness and competitiveness? Do you keep competing or is it one of those things that you like the year before you just really buckle down and get ready? How did that look for you?
Yeah, it looked for me a little different, I guess, in what phase I was in. So when I was competing, let's say when I was still in college, it was a little different because, you know, you competed in the college season. So you would, you know, that's, you know, August through February. And then you'd start going into, you know, the quote summer season when you're still, you know, still in school, and then the summer part comes and then you're either going with your back to your home team or, you know, wherever you choose to do it. So, but typically my phase would be, you know, you have world championships every 2 years. So you'd have that main course. So you really don't have any downtime. Yeah. Swimming isn't, you know, probably as you know, swimming is just, it's not a seasonal sport, kind of like other things are, like baseball or softball or something like that, because you do have a short course and a long course season. So you may only have a week or two break come, you know, the beginning of August, and then that's it. I mean, so there's not much downtime in when you're dealing with swimming.
So you were really just, just pushing it and in shape and ready to go at a moment's notice during that entire swimming career. Just kudos. That's amazing. I mean, my mind is trying to wrap around that level of fitness perpetually, continually, year after year after year. That's awesome. We've got about, I don't know, 2 minutes left or so, but I do want to ask you this question. 55 Olympic medals, 41 gold. I mean, just this incredible amount of success. Yeah. Is there one medal or race or experience that just stands out to you as like, wow, that was a moment?
Yeah, you know, medals, I've said this before to in other interviews, is, you know, medals are great and they're wonderful, but they don't define a person. Yeah. And so every medal, you know, that I've won, you know, had a different meaning to it. But I think the most important one for me was probably the one in 2004, which was my last games. And that was because my mom had passed away 2 months before the games, and she had always been to all my games before. Yeah. And so winning a medal there, and what I had gone through in order to, like you said earlier, to prepare, you know, was probably the most challenging. And so that probably was the one medal that probably means the most.
Yeah. What a moment. Yeah. What a moment to be able to, I mean, to look back over this amazing career, to have gone through some, you know, just life challenges, but then also to lose your mother and like so many things. I can only imagine the emotion of touching the blocks and realizing, okay, yes, I did it. What a great moment.
Yeah.
What an incredible opportunity. What are you doing to help prepare the next generation?
You know, I hope to, you know, be able to go out and I go out and I speak to them, but not just from a Paralympic perspective, but just young women in itself is, you know, to allow them to know that if anything, you know, that they choose to do, that they, you know, work hard for it, you know, that it's not going to come, you know, and just be given to them, that you have to be dedicated and passionate about what, you know, your goals are, and that, you know, you have that support system for you, because, you know, unfortunately, some people don't have that support system. And that's really important in your journey. And so I just try to inspire those young women, young girls and women coming up that, you know, that anything is possible if they just choose to put their mind to it.
Right. Well, Tricia, you are certainly an example of
absolutely.
That. And once again, congratulations on an incredibly successful swimming career and everything else that you're doing. Holy cow. It's just, like I said, just truly an inspiration.
Yeah.
And I know that you're paying it forward and giving back to those that are coming along behind you. So good luck in all of that work as well. And, and everything that you have going on. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Isn't that great, Lil?
It was awesome.
Yeah. Holy cow. I mean, just again, like I said, just the level of commitment and dedication and fitness is just amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, hey, just to wrap us up here, a couple of quick reminders. I said it at the beginning of the show, but just, man, now is the time to register. Take advantage of the early bird registration. You can find everything you need to know at seniorgames.net. We're going to have schedules, rules, the days of the events, everything that is necessary for you to be successful in registering for the games is there, including the registration itself. And then just a reminder, you can save $40 by taking advantage of early bird pricing, which is going to end on August 1st. It's just a few days away. So now's the time. Our guest next week is 70-year-old Jeff Tidwell. He's an athlete who played baseball in the Babe Ruth World Series in 1969. And then he went on to play baseball at the university level. He competes in the Huntsman World Senior Games in both pickleball and softball. Aww. And he and his softball team started playing together in high school, and they are still competing together now at the World Senior Games. We're going to visit with him next week, so you don't want to miss that. Remember to tune in live next and every Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Mountain Time on AM 1450 or FM 93.1 for the Huntsman World Senior Games Active Life. We take this live show and turn it into a podcast, and you can subscribe pretty much anywhere that you find your favorite podcasts. Also, take just a moment and write a review or give us a rating. That really helps us spread the word. You can find this as well as previous shows on our website at seniorgames.net. So check that out. Today's inspirational thought, it comes from award-winning journalist Michelle Ruiz. And this is cool. She says, if people are doubting how far you can go, go so far that you can't hear them anymore. Until next Thursday, stay active.